is Championship Monday here at the Orleans Arena. As we all expected, as is a March tradition, it is St. Mary's and Gonzaga in the WCC Championship one more time. Santa Clara, St. Mary's being able to top Santa Clara last night, Gonzaga doing the same to USF. We'll get into both of those games as we go. But here we are one more time for the WCC Championship. The two teams that have dominated this league for a long, long time, back at it again here tonight at 6 p.m. on ESPN. Before we get anywhere else, please hit that subscribe button, like on your favorite streaming service, all that sort of stuff. Follow on the podcast, follow on social at Post by Zach and all that good stuff. So we are here one more time, but we'll start with the two games that we did see last night, and we'll start with the first game, St. Mary's and Santa Clara. And this was really early on a back and forth fight. Santa Clara did, I thought, what they should have done and kept it close throughout that first half. They played really well. Carlos Marshall Jr. was hot early, 9 points very quickly in that first half. And we also saw some great play. I thought Cameron Tung had a couple nice moments in that first half. But then St. Mary's did start to separate themselves later in that half. I think it was about 24-23, and then we started to see a separation between these two. And the separation, one was the fast break. St. Mary's took advantage of the fast break for when we don't see that all too often. And Augustus Marshallonis was a key part of that. A couple of really nice takes to the basket using that Euro step that his dad made famous, and got the Gales up early. They had a 10-4 advantage in fast break points in that first half. They ended up leading by 7 in the first half. But the other key component, probably more than anything, was the play of Alex Dukas. He had 18 first half points. He was 6-for-7 from 3. He was lights out. Even there was another 3 in that first half where they called a foul off the ball, and he made that shot too. So he really was just incredible last night. And we've seen this more and more in conference play, as it looks like he's just gotten healthier. It's just taken him a while to kind of get back to the guy we were used to seeing. And Randy Bennett talked about that in the postgame press conference a bit, about how it just took him some time to get back to the guy that he was because of the injury, especially, and this dates all the way back to the back injury against UConn last year. We saw what looked like he may have tweaked it even at the beginning of this season. So it's taken him time to get that back. And especially when you have a back injury, like that impacts your shot. And maybe we didn't see that offensive punch early on in the season, or even through the middle of the season, but we have absolutely seen it as we've gotten deeper into the season. I mean, he shot nearly 50% from 3 in WCC play. Last night, obviously, another indicator of just how good he's been. Ended up being 7-for-11 from 3. Dukas has definitely stepped up his game almost at the right time, as he's gotten physically back to where we expect him to be. Has been what they've needed the most. And in that second half of this one, both offenses did actually start to click a little bit more. Dukas was not as much a factor in the second half for St. Mary's. But who was a factor in that second half, a big factor, was Mason Forbes. He had 18 points in the game. He was 8-for-9 from the field. He was 2-for-9 from the free throw line, so he was not good there. But he became an active part of the offensive rotation in this game. And a lot of it was cuts to the basket, things happening right around the rim. This wasn't a guy who, like, he wasn't actually taking that, like, mid-range or perimeter shots. Like, he was making all of his buckets. He was cashing in around the basket. And it was huge because Mitchell Saxon was also in foul trouble for a good amount of the game. He ended up fouling out late. And so having him step up like he did was critical for what St. Mary's was able to accomplish last night. And we also saw some key buckets from Augustus Marshallonis. And in that second half, it's not that Santa Clara went away. Santa Clara was still trying to hang with St. Mary's. They shot in that second half 57% from the field. Carlos Marshall ended up with 26 for the game. Like, he was trying to keep these guys in it. Christian Hammond, he had 13 points, but they weren't getting any help from anywhere else. St. Mary's did a really good job of forcing Adama Ball to play outside of himself and play a different game and force shots. He only had 2 points on the night. He was 1 for 7 from the field. This looked much more like the Adama Ball that we saw against Gonzaga a couple weeks ago, not the one that we saw two nights on Saturday against San Diego. And you looked up and down. It's like Johnny O'Neill was held to 3. Christoph Tilly was held to 7. Jalen Benjamin had 5. Tyree Bryan had 2. Santa Clara just did not get enough on the offensive end. And you have to credit the St. Mary's defense for a lot of that. They just made their life really difficult on that end of the floor. And St. Mary's was able to just to kind of continue to kind of push and push and really just start to continue to slowly separate themselves in that game. It wasn't until the 14-48 mark in the second half when St. Mary's went up by 12 and then never relinquished a 10-point lead. It was always 10-plus after that point. Led by as many as 19, ended up winning by 14. The St. Mary's team looked more like the team that we're used to seeing. Especially considering after the last game that they played, which was against Gonzaga, that was Saturday, so about 10 days ago was when they saw Gonzaga. This was their first game off that 10-game break, and they looked like they hadn't missed a beat. So a lot of positive things for St. Mary's in that contest. Some interesting things to think about as well. The Mason Forbes component is interesting. I'll get a little bit more into that when we talk about the matchup with Gonzaga. But St. Mary's looked like themselves. They played really well defensively. They made life difficult for Santa Clara. Santa Clara still on the offensive end, did what they needed to do early. They played well on that end. They just could not slow St. Mary's down. Santa Clara shot 47% from the field for the game. But St. Mary's shot 53%, and it was really the points in the paint that really was the big difference in this one, 42-26. And this is what this is what they do. This is part of just what their DNA is. They attack the paint. They get second chance points. They had 11 offensive rebounds in this one. It was 18-4 in that second chance category. And for Santa Clara, as they wrap up their season, I mean, you can kind of go back and forth on this one of like this Santa Clara team was good. They had a lot of really special moments in this year. You look at what they did against Oregon. You look at what they did against Washington State. You look at their win against Gonzaga. They have moments, but they just could not put it together. In some of these other games, you drop a game to San Diego, you drop a game to the likes of Portland, you lose to Cal. You have some of these weird games that kind of push you back a step after having some of these great accomplishments. So the Santa Clara team has a lot of, it's going to be very interesting going in the next year. You lose Carlos Marshall Jr., you lose Francisco Cafaro, but outside of that, this team, assuming no transfers, should look very similar to this past year, and another year of growth, another year of development. This is going to be a fascinating group to watch going into next season. And yes, there Adama Ball, there is rumor that like he could end up jumping to the NBA draft. That is still a possibility. I expect him still to enter the draft no matter what, and just at the very least, it's going to be see what his stock is, where he stands. And my guess would be if he's predicted mid-second, late second, that he would return. But if he's anything higher than that, I would say there's a very good chance that he goes. But we also know that Coach Herbsendek has done a very good job the last few years of being able to just replenish the well there in Santa Clara. So I expect them to be back. I expect them to be back in the mix in that top half of the WCC a year from now. Yes, Washington State comes in. Now we'll have to factor all of that in as well. But the Santa Clara team, in my opinion, they'll be back. They'll be back in a similar position next year. But a couple of just the health, they had health concerns late, inconsistencies, the turnovers, all those little things. Santa Clara had a good year. They had 20 plus wins again, and you cannot overlook just the things that were accomplished by this squad. All right, so switch gears to Gonzaga and USF. And this first half looked very much like the first half we saw at Chase Center. USF played well early, got some great contributions from Malik Thomas, from Marcus Williams early on in that contest. They looked like they at one point had, I think it was like a 5-6 point lead in that contest. Actually, I think it even got up to 8 at one point. But then Gonzaga started chipping away, started chipping away, started chipping away, and closed the half, the first half, really well, as they did at Chase Center just last week, 2.5 weeks ago. And after all it was said, it was done. USF playing really well, playing Gonzaga toe to toe and everything like that, having an 8 point lead at one point. Gonzaga led at the half by one. After all of that, it was Gonzaga by one at the half. And I looked at that. I was looking over at a couple of people, and I'm like, "Oh no, not again!" It looked like a repeat. I thought I was watching the same game, or at least a similar game. They did a much better job on Graham Ike in that first half. Or they really did have a game plan to force other people to beat them. And early on, that was Anton Watson. It was Ben Gregg who were the guys who really stepped up and filled that void. Ben Gregg had 17 and 11 in the game, 5 for 9 from the field, incredibly efficient. I mean, he was just everywhere last night. I feel like every loose ball he was there for it. Every 50-50 ball, Ben Gregg was there. He had a great night last night. And then we walked into that second half, and Gonzaga starts to go on a run. Not quite the one that we saw at Chase Center. USF did have its moments where it was pushing back, but Gonzaga kept extending the lead, extending the lead, extending the lead. And with about 11 minutes to go, it was 19. And at that stage, you're like, this is, it felt like it was a wrap. And it felt like it was a wrap early in that second half, because we were watching the same script all over again. USF just did not look like themselves. They could not stop Gonzaga in that second half, is more to the point. Gonzaga shot 62% in that second half. They were 7 for 10 from three. Nolan Hickman once again had a great second half against the Dons, finished with 20 points, 6 assists. Ryan Nembhard also was really good in that second half. He finished with 16 points and 12 assists. And it just looked like USF could not find the answer for the Gonzaga offense. And we know the Gonzaga offense has been the most one of the most efficient, if not the most efficient offense in the country over the last, what, say, month and a half. And for so looking at the school, looking at that game, it was a total repeat, complete, like copy, it was copy paste from the Chase Center game to here. And disappointing, obviously, for USF for that to end, be the end result. This game was obviously a lot closer, 89-77, the final. But they could not find the answer for the Gonzaga offense. They could not, their adjustments at halftime did not allow them to kind of get over that hump. And it feels like that's been the story for USF all year long. They can't get over the hump. They can't find that next level. The number of close losses, which I have kind of talked about over and over and over again about how USF just cannot find a way to win these big games. Utah State, St. Mary's, Gonzaga, Boise, Grand Canyon, all these teams who are going to be tournament teams, or maybe not Boise State, but the rest of them are going to be in that, are already locks or close to being the lock. They need to find that extra gear. They need to find who's going to be that, how to close the halves, how to close these games out. And I don't know if that's how you kind of go about that through the development of your current guys, if it's the if it's going out to the portal and finding a guy who is established in that way. But this USF team is largely composed of guys who should be back. Josh Koonin is the one senior you look at. Josh Koonin and Mark Avetsky are the two seniors. So you have a couple of role players who are going to be missing, but the core of this group, the group that's going to make a difference in crunch time, should be back, assuming no transfers. And I think the transfer portal is going to be interesting this year with the NCAA making a little bit more of a stance on two-time transfers. And USF had a ton of transfers. Santa Clara the same way. That's why I kind of think like they're going to hold these pieces together a little bit more. This USF squad is younger. Like the entire starting five should be back, and that is going to be a huge lift for what they have going into next year. Marcus Williams and Malik Thomas in this game, I mean, they were great. Like they did exactly what they needed to do. They have 39 combined points in the game against Gonzaga in the semifinal. You should have Dwito Newberry back. You should have Jonathan Momo back. You should have Ryan Beasley back. Mike Sharo-Jones should be back. There's a lot of these pieces should be returning. And another year of growth, another year of gelling with this group will be fascinating to see, because I think they are capable of taking that next step. The talent is there. It's just a matter of finding the tweaks here and there that are going to allow them to take that next step. I mean, for Gonzaga, so flipping back to Gonzaga in this one, I mean, I said, like, I thought what they had to do was just kind of continue to be who they are. And that's exactly what they were. Like they were great inside the paint. They are looking at the box score again. Like ended up shooting 50% from the field. They actually did take more threes in this contest. They were 11 for 20 from three. So USF tried to kind of keep them out the lane, but Gonzaga was pretty efficient from the 3-point line. Ben Grigg 4 for 7, Nolan Hickman 2 for 3, Ryan Nebhart 2 for 3. The Gonzaga offense, this team is clicking, and they've been clicking for a while. We saw what they did at USF at St. Mary's a week ago. We go into the championship game with what looks like to be Gonzaga playing some of its, continuing to play its best basketball, and St. Mary's looking more like itself going into the contest on Tuesday. And it does bring us back to the game that almost is a damn near annual tradition of Gonzaga and St. Mary's in the championship game for the WCC championship. Gonzaga has now, this is going to be their 27th straight appearance in the WCC championship game, dating all the way back to 98. This will be St. Mary's' third straight trip to the title game. And obviously, as we know, they have been a regular in that title game since the conference has moved the tournament here to the Orleans. Still largely has favored Gonzaga in that matchup in this building. But St. Mary's has won 3 tournament championships in this building, 2010, 2012, and then 2019. So we know St. Mary's is capable of doing it. They were the one seed in the conference this year. They did beat Gonzaga in Spokane. And the one thing that St. Mary's, I think, still needed to figure out, because I don't know if they had quite done that yet, was how do you fill the void of Josh Jefferson? How do you fill his production in other locations? And I think we've started to see that more like with Alex Dukas and his play. Talked a little bit about that of like just hit how he is once he has gotten healthy. He kind of happened at the right time. He started getting more healthy as Jefferson went down, and he's been allowed to kind of step up and be more of that offensive firepower that they do need. And last night, they also found a way to get Mason Forbes more involved in the offense. They found ways to kind of like roll him to the basket, find him on cuts, find him above the rim. Like they found ways to really kind of get Mason Forbes and more involved early on in that contest. And that really helped. And that might be a formula that they might be able to use against Gonzaga. Because what you don't want is, and we saw this in the game of Moraga, is that they just kind of left Forbes out there on his own and on the perimeter if he's standing out on the mid wing, kind of daring him to take that shot. Now, if Lee, maybe what you need to do is like, and kind of rotate him, like kind of have him slashing more to the basket. Don't let him just stand out there because putting him in motion, I think, makes him more dangerous and makes him more of a valuable asset for the squad. Because that's what it looked like against Santa Clara. He was a much more valuable piece, like moving and cutting and finding a way to the rim than he was standing out on the wing. And without Jefferson, without that kind of mid-range threat, you kind of need to mix and match that a little bit more. And also, I mean, the one thing Samer is also going to need, that I do think that they're going to need something from Luke Barrett as well. He did not have a good game last night. He was 0 for 8 from the field. He was 6 of 6 from the line. He had 8 rebounds, so he was able to contribute in other ways, but it was a poor shooting night for him. And I think it is going to be critical for him to contribute on that offensive and be a threat from the perimeter, be a threat of on the floor, because Gonzaga was allowed in the last matchup to play a lot of 4-on-5, and obviously you don't want to actually ever have that be a regular thing of having just voids on the offensive end. So those are things I think you have to look at, and I mentioned it last week when I was talking to Andy Patton on the Locked On Zags podcast, that I think one of the other keys is going to be Augustus Marshallonis and just his ability to be more assertive finding his shot. And he did take 9 shots last night, so he was a little bit more assertive on that front. A lot of that was also he was aggressive on the break. He found ways to get out in transition and real and use his skills to be able to actually get a couple of easy buckets. And I think that's going to be I think that's a key too here. It's like if Samers can mix in that fast break, in those fast break opportunities against Gonzaga, that opens up the floor a little bit more and allows them to have some easier offense because Gonzaga is going to press them early. We know that's going to happen. We know they're going to try to take Samers out of that rhythm and make them kill 10 seconds off that shot clock and not allow Samers to get into that methodical, slow rhythm that they like to have and speed them up more. So, because we know Gonzaga is going to try to speed them up, you need to be prepped for that. And I think what we saw against Santa Clara was a little bit more of that, is that Samers was able to play a little bit faster. They moved the ball better in the game last night than they had against Gonzaga, and they were able to find easier shots. And that's going to be critical for Gonzaga. Ryan Nembhard has been, I think, the best player in the two games against St. Mary's. He has been an absolute monster on the offensive end. Remember, 20 points, 10 rebounds, all not 10 with 10 assists. Like that was the last game in Moraga, but he has commanded that offense. He has really kind of taken control of the games in late in the game in Spokane, and then also really all game long in Moraga. He has been, I think, the best player for the Zags at those two contests, and I think it is going to be the challenge for St. Mary's to try to make it more difficult for him, because he is so good at spacing, because he's so good at finding angles. And there was one pass last night that he found Ryan Nemhard cutting. Ryan Nemhard found Nolan Hickman cutting underneath the basket in a really tight window, and that was one of the better passes I've seen him throw. It's like it was an amazing cut and finish. This Gonzaga team, like, he is orchestrating this to a T. Like, he is finding guys where they need to be. He's making them more dangerous, because you cannot turn your back to him, because you never know when that cutter is going to catch an open pass at the basket, cutting to the hoop, finding him in rhythm. Ryan Nemhard has gotten better and better and better at that as the season has gone along. I think so. He is the key for me for Gonzaga. The other key for me is going to be actually almost pressure, continuing the pressure inside on St. Mary's, because right now they are still a little shorthanded. You don't have, obviously we know about Josh Jefferson, but we also don't know about the availability of Harry Wessels. He was in uniform, but he did not play on Monday night. Who knows if that's going to be the same case for Tuesday. But that means that this is an incredibly small team if Mitchell Saxon gets in foul trouble like he did against Santa Clara. He only played 25 minutes. He fouled out in those 25 minutes. He had 9 points, 8 rebounds. So, but when he comes out the game, St. Mary's has no choice right now but to go small. Mason Forbes becomes your five. Luke Barrett at times becomes your four. Alex Dukas could become your four. And I think this is one of the challenges, one of the things you have that they are going to have to fight through and be able to handle as St. Mary's tries to actually figure that out. But also, like, this is what Gonzaga is going to be able to try to take advantage of. Like, this is, they play so well inside already. They play in the paint well. Again, we can talk about, like, all the numbers of how efficient they are inside. If they get Mitchell Saxon in foul trouble, it could be a long night for St. Mary's. And that does impact his aggressiveness or whatnot as well. But I think this is more about how Gonzaga is going to play this. I know, like, teams don't necessarily go, they don't plan to, oh, get this guy in foul trouble. But the way Gonzaga attacks the basket, the way they run their offense anyway, could lend itself to getting Saxon in foul trouble early on, which is going to be a huge factor, a huge benefit for the Bulldogs. And defensively, this is the other thing. Like, they have clamped down. I think their defense, their pressure defense is the other critical component, because I don't, for whatever reason, for 20-ish years, St. Mary's teams have struggled to handle the press. And Gonzaga, in this game a year ago, did exactly that in this game and pressured them from the get-go. And this game got out of hand fast. The title game a year ago was ugly. And it was because they could not handle the press. It was because they could not handle the length of Gonzaga. And okay, Gonzaga's not as long this year as they were a year ago. They're not as athletic necessarily as they were a year ago. I mean, Julian Strother was the one I felt like was the real kind of defensive difference when they switched him onto Mahaney a year ago. But this Gonzaga team is still very good in what they do. Like, they're still they still make you take tough shots. They still force you into bad scenarios. How they play the press, how Gonzaga utilizes that, and I don't think they're going to play it. They're not going to play it all night long, but you're going to see a fair amount of it. You're going to see it from the get-go. You're going to see it late in the game. You're going to see it probably at the beginning of the second half. They're going to try to force St. Mary's into uncomfortable spots, and their success in that is one of the biggest keys in this ball game, because as we know, when it's efficient, when it works well, Gonzaga can run away with games quickly. And if St. Mary's is able to break it and handle it more efficiently, I think we're going to have a ball game. We're going to have a really good ball game on our hands. And thinking, oh, hold on, let me take a look, because there was something in here pop open my phone, because I wanted to see the line. I was talking with some people. Oh, what's going to be the opening line? Blah, blah, blah. I heard it's like, oh, 2 points, 1 point, whatever else. Hey, look at that. I might have been, I was right. So opening the line this morning, at least on ESPN, is at 3, 3.5 in favor of Gonzaga, which is actually about where I thought it would be based on what we saw in Moraga just 10 days ago, based on the way Gonzaga has been playing overall, based on the Jefferson injury, all those factors. That line makes sense to me. I think we're going to be in for a good one. I hope it's a good one tonight. Because you have a lot of guys like this is going to be the last WCC game for Alex Doukas. This is going to be the last WCC game for Mason Forbes. This is going to be the last WCC game for Anton Watson. And we have seen over the years how the seniors step up in these moments. I think last year too, Khalil Shabazz and the performance he put on against Santa Clara, because he just would not go home. And I think that's what we might see. I think we're going to see the seniors, though, the seniors who know we know are leaving for sure, step up in these moments. Anton Watson, a year ago, when we actually did not know if he was going or not, played a great title game. Like he, that was maybe one of his better games of the year in this building, in the championship game. So I expect in this title game, the seniors, the Alex Doukases, the Anton Watsons, the Mason Forbes, to be the guys who are going to step up and kind of lead the charge in this game. I mean, looking around here, I mean, it's empty now, but this place is going to be packed in just a few hours. This place is going to be rocking. This place is going to be fun. And yes, it is Spokane South. It is a place where Gonzaga has won, I think it's 11 of the WCC championships to this point in this building. But as we kind of go through, as I wrap this up, you know what? I do have one thing to say, and I'm going to let my St. Mary's out on this one. And it is, you know what? It is beat the Zags. All right. So I'm going to wrap it up. Get one more time. Be sure to hit the subscribe button on YouTube. Follow me on social media at Posts by Zach. Be sure to like podcasts on your favorite streaming services and all of that good stuff. It's Championship Tuesday. It is going to be a fun night, one way or another. And this is our final game, the WCC's final game before the NCAA tournament, before Selection Sunday. We know Gonzaga is in. We know St. Mary's is going to be in. It's just a matter of where they're going to land. So this one is for bragging rights. It's a little bit for seeding in the tournament. But this one's for pride. And it's Gonzaga. It's St. Mary's. It's going to be a fun night. Thanks everyone for watching, listening wherever you're listening. Check in with me on all the things, and have fun tonight. It's gonna be rocking in this building, and at least for this one time, I'm gonna actually go and say it. Go Gales.